Welcome to a new episode of Operation Gundog. We hope you enjoy it.
Back.
Welcome back to another episode of Operation Gundog. This week we are on episode 12, and we're going to be talking to you guys about season hunt tests. So this is a battle-tested episode to stem off of our previous battle-tested episode. Before we dive into the content, we'd like to give a shout-out to our sponsor, Dirty Duck Coffee. If you guys haven't tried them yet, you definitely need to. Some of the best coffee we've ever tried. And we have a code for you guys to use, OGD15, and I'll give you 15% off of your order. This week's guest is Tyler Meaden. He is the man behind Gundog Outpost on Instagram and GundogOutpost.com. And he's also the golden voice behind the Off Lead podcast. If you haven't heard them yet, give them a listen after you finish this episode. And we kind of had to outsource to Tyler because neither John nor myself have any experience within the seasoned realm of hunt tests. So he's going to kind of give us a rundown and a firsthand experience of what a seasoned HRC hunt test looks like. So joining me as always is John McCarter, and you can find him at Bayou Gundog on Instagram. I'm Dominic Moyo, and you can find me at The Puddle Hound on Instagram. And John, how about you kick us off with some questions for Mr. Meaden over there?
Right on. So we'll just start off with an intro. Tyler, tell us where you're located, how long you've been training, a little bit about yourself.
Sure. My name is Tyler Meaden. I live in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. That is technically a suburb of Milwaukee, so it's in the southeastern part of the state. How long have I been training? We had a dog growing up who was not really well trained. How long have I been training effectively? It's probably about 4 years now. When I picked up my dog Mac and basically dove in and haven't looked back since.
Kind of a first gun dog trainer yourself. You're just a little further along than Dominic and I, especially as far as go. Those that don't know, can you explain what exactly is a seasoned hunt test and what happens?
Sure. Yeah. And so seasoned is the level right after started. So it's the mid level. It's where you're going to step up and you're going to start running blinds and such. So, you know, the test itself, you know, when you look at a started test, you're looking at, you know, two single landmarks, two single water marks or water retrieves. At the season level, you're looking at a double land, a double on water. You're going to have a lined or a land blind and then a water blind as well. You're also going to have what they call a walk up. And then somewhere in there, they will toss in a diversion bird. So the number of birds that your dog picks up compared to the started level it's a lot more.
Right on, and a little more complicated as you could guess.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a lot more complicated, and you know, when you get into the mechanics of the test too, you know, you're going to be handling the gun, which is a huge difference. That's just working with the gun. You know, if you haven't run at the season level or handled the gun before, working through those mechanics will make you nervous enough. Let alone worrying about what your dog's going to do when you're running a test.
Right. What do you think are some of the more common reasons for not passing a seasoned hunt test? And I'm sure there's some parts of that could fall on the handler with the gun or, you know, with the dog and how you handle it.
That's a good question. I mean, I think, you know, when you start to get up to the season level and then you go beyond that, what the judges start to look for is control. And I'm a total nerd, so I do read the rule book. I generally read it the week before I'm going to run a test. And what they talk about or what they say in there is you need to your dog needs to demonstrate a quote unquote reasonable degree of control, whatever that actually means. And so, you know, what I guess, you know, the tests that I've run, what I see with dogs who, you know, aren't quite ready or who are failing season tests is maybe there's a break on the walk up. Maybe there's they're not steady at the line because, you know, you can't hold the dog's collar at the season level. They have to sit there while the marks go off and then go upon your command. You know, when you get to the blind portion, that's where control really comes in. You know, the further a dog gets away from you, the less control that you have just in general over the dog. And so as that dog gets out there 10, 20, 30 yards away from you, when you're running a blind and you blow the whistle, you do get whistle refusals. You do get cast refusals at the season level. But, you know, if your dog is constantly refusing those, that's going to get you in a lot of trouble on the blind. It's going to get you markdowns. You're going to get markdown scores on the, you know, from the judges, if you do get there. So control is kind of the magic word that I think of, and it can show up in a variety of spots within the test.
Right. Yeah. It sounds like, you know, they're wanting to see you basically handle your dog at a distance, have them steady at a distance. And so with that, what are some things that you could do early on in your dog's foundation that would help a handler find success later on at the seasoned level?
Yeah, you know, I think it really starts with like your obedience work, your basic OB work, and laying that foundation. You know, when you think about like the sit command. So if a dog is breaking, they're breaking the sit command. So if, you know, as you go up in the level of test, there's going to be more and more excitement, more birds, more gunshots. You know, the tests are going to get more complicated. The judges may throw a bird right in your dog's face, and there's going to be a greater chance or more enticement for them to break, right? But that's breaking the sit command. And then when you're running a blind, right, and your dog, you blow the whistle and your dog refuses the whistle, they're refusing the sit command because the whistle also becomes part of the sit command. So that's all basic OB, right? You're talking about basic obedience work, and that's really the key. I mean, there is the more technical, you know, pieces that you're training on, you know, different drills, that sort of thing. But you know, where things generally go wrong is honestly it's at the foundation level, and that pops out. Those training holes pop out. You know, the further you get along in testing, and especially with some of the things that they throw at you in the season test. Like if you haven't seen a diversion bird, if you haven't practiced a walk up, you know, those things are going to show up.
Absolutely. What are some of the more technical drills that you do kind of in preparation right before the season hunt tests? And are you running a lot of mock tests for practice, or just kind of breaking up each individual thing, like the diversion bird, like you mentioned?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. I, a lot of people like to run a lot of setups. I can tell you, this past summer I ran finish, and the couple of weeks before I ran basically all setups and got away from the drill work, and that came back to bite me. Typically what I do is, you know, I'll run one, maybe two setups per week on like an actual mock test where you're running through the different pieces of the test, the different mechanics of the test. Otherwise, working on drills or working on just one individual concept, one individual piece, right? Practicing the walk-up, you know, that portion of it, you know, working on drills on blinds and things, you know. And I don't, you know, technical drill-wise, it's before a test. You know, hopefully I'm through some of that stuff, because I'm thinking, you know, at the season level, you know, you should be through T drill, double T, and, you know, wagon wheel for fine tuning, a lot of your handling, you know. And then, you know, before the test, a couple weeks before the test, I'm thinking about, okay, let's make sure my handling is spot on. So I'm running, you know, wagon wheel drills, as tune-ups between setups. You know, I'm running some memory blinds or pattern blinds to continue momentum on blinds. Those are the big things that I'm looking at. And then, you know, you singles, lots of singles in between your multiple marks, right? Multiple mark setups, so that your dog doesn't start developing a bad habit with head swings.
Absolutely. And that's something that the judges are going to definitely be looking at. and we talked a little bit about or what the judges are looking for from the dog. And you, I know you mentioned control before as well, but can you also talk a little bit about what the judges are looking for from the handler? Maybe mention a little bit about handling the gun for the season test.
Sure. Gun safety, you know, if you haven't run a hunt test in HRC, the judges go over gun safety, and that's the big thing from a handler's perspective. So you have to operate the gun, and that includes, you know, keeping it on safe, keeping it open, the chamber open, because you're shooting a pump, a Remington 870. And, you know, when you don't have shells in it, it's got to be open and safe is basically the word. So you walk up to the line, you sit down on the bucket, you load the shotgun, close the chamber, check with the judges, you know, they're ready to go, blow your duck call, which signals to the judges to launch the first bird and then the second bird. You keep it on safety, and you're supposed to fire at the top of the arc of the bird, and then pump, swing to the second bird, and then eject, and then you send your dog. And people get in trouble because they send their dog, and you're super nervous, and you maybe might set the gun down, and you forget to pump out the last shell. You forget to, you know, leave the safety or turn the safety back on. So that'll get your, you know, handlers in trouble a lot. Usually the judges are pretty lenient. They'll try to help you out, especially if it's your first test and you're working through it the first time. You can't touch the dog at the line, you know, so they watch for that. There's things that they look for from a handler's perspective, but usually it comes out in the dog. I guess that's the way I look at it, right? You know, there's only so many things that you can do once your dog starts the test. From a handler's perspective,
can you send the dog as soon as the second bird lands, or do you have to wait for an okay from the judge?
You can send your dog. So if you read the rule book, they say, like, on the judge's cue, the season test that I've run, bird hits the ground, send your dog. Then go ahead and eject, put it on safe. Take your time doing that stuff. Turn around, you know, it's the goal bird. If your dog saw it, and you're running this level, they shouldn't have an issue. They should run the area.
Right. And then whenever they return, typically you would run the blind, and you're shooting at the blind.
So, yeah. So that's the other thing. And that was the weird thing for me, I think, to get used to is, so, you know, your dog's got to deliver to hand at this level. They pick up the first bird, then they go pick up the second bird. And then what the weird mechanical piece of the season test for me was, you know, then you get up, you go to a different, like, area, different designated spot, because the blind itself is supposed to be, you know, through quote unquote easy cover or relatively open water. So they're going to take you away from, like, the suction of those marks. Your decoys are probably going to be set off to the side a little bit. You're not going to be, you know, having to, you know, run a blind right through the decoys, but you got to move though. You move over, you heel your dog over, you put them on lead, you heel them over. Take them off lead, you load the gun, you point the gun at the blind, you shoot, eject the shell, open and safe, and then you line your dog up and you run the blind.
I like it. So there's probably a second gun for this, typically? Okay.
Yes, typically.
No more bucket?
Yep. No bucket on that one. You need to get off the bucket.
Okay. You're answering all my questions. I don't know if everyone else that's listening and is enjoying this as much as I am, but I'm feeling readier already. next question. How did you know when you were ready for seasoned? And two-part question. Do you think that there's a bigger gap in between started and seasoned, or seasoned and finished?
So to answer your first question, I didn't know I was ready. I signed up and hoped. That's not a really good answer. But I thought that I could get him to the level where we would be good enough to pass. And I shouldn't say good enough, because generally when I come into a test, I want to ace the test. That's my thinking. And I want to be 100% when in training, because I'm probably only going to get 80% of that at a test. You know, my dog is a little bit nuts at tests. He's test smart. So he does things at test that, you know, he won't do in training, no matter if I'm training alone or, you know, training with my buddy who runs his own kennel and there's 15 dogs tied out and barking away and we have a very, very much a test-like scenario. But, you know, I signed up, but probably had 2 months to really grind through it and make the progress that we needed. And, you know, for people that haven't, that are making the jump from started to season for the first time, everybody's most nervous about blinds, right? That's the big thing. And, you know, that was the big thing. That was the thing that I really tried to hammer on was blinds. You know, I had to go backward in training and go back a step or two. And then to actually go forward like 10 steps and be able to run it. So, as for your second part of your question, I used to think that the jump from started to seasoned was, you know, a bigger jump than the jump from seasoned to finished, because, you know, there's so many different pieces of the season test that are not in the started test. You're running multiple marks, you have a walk up, you know, you have a diversion bird, and then you're adding blinds, right? And if you've never trained on that before, it, you know, blinds are like the scariest thing. I think they're the funnest thing to try to run, because they're I found them to be a real challenge. So that was my mindset initially, and then I ran finish this past summer, and the amount of precision that you need to run finished is pretty incredible, and the amount that you have to show your dog from a you know, different concept standpoint. I think the jump from season to finish is bigger.
All right. Well, that's good for me. And, you know, cause the next step for me is season. So I can worry about that a little later. With that being said, you know, and a big reason why I wanted to have you on, this week is because I've been eyeballing the season test for Bonnie, and, it opens up next week, for sign up. So I'm hoping to get in there. I got my, alarm set. I think we're ready. You know, we've been doing a lot of the, you know, the blind work, and like you said, simplifying. I think we're, you know, heading in the right direction. I guess we'll find out by the end of the month.
When is the test?
It's the 24th and 25th of October. So, yeah.
Okay. You got six weeks to run 2-a-days. You know, that's the way I always did it.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Dominic, I know you had some questions that were more about Tyler and Mac and a little less about the hunt test. So if you want to dive off into those.
So Tyler, I do have a question for you, because we kind of talked in general about the differences between your started level and your season level. But, you know, what are some more specific differences, such as like the distance of the marks, holding blind matters? Do they affect your outcome there? You know, what is a walk-up diversion bird for people who might not have heard that term before?
There's a lot of questions there. So from a distance standpoint, that on the land, you know, the maximum distance according to the rule book is 100 yards for a season level mark, and that's a lot further than a started level mark. On the water, it's 75 yards. So what you're really looking at is likely greater distances on your marks for both land and water when you're running season versus started. So that's, you know, that's a big thing. You know, you're going to have to stretch your dog out on marks if you've only been running short marks and running started tests. You know, the walk up, the diversion bird. So I'll start with the diversion bird. That's probably the easiest one to explain. So essentially, your dog is coming back from picking up a blind, and on the way back, the judges will launch or hand throw a bird that will land between you and the dog, not directly in line, off to the side, should be quite a bit. And they want to test the control you have over the dog, because the dog should come back to you. And then you take that bird, and then they go pick up the diversion bird.
Let me interrupt you real quick before you go on. Can you yell here at them or whistle as soon as it goes off?
Yes. So as soon as the diversion bird is launched, especially if it's on land, you know, for me, I ran upland before I ran season. And so in upland, your dog needs to be steady to wing shot and fall. So if a bird goes up in the air, they need to sit right away. And so we've done enough of that where the bird goes up in the air. I always blow the whistle anyway. And then the dog sits, the bird lands, and then I give my hear whistle, which is three toots on the whistle, and he comes back. Now, I nearly had a switch at a season test. It was most of the time your diversion bird is probably going to be on water. The dog's coming back slower. You can still blow the whistle and things. They'll just keep coming. In this case, what I had was like a 45, 50 yard blind on land, and my dog is fast. So as soon as he picked up the bird, when I got done handling, I had to grab the gun, load it, and then they launched the bird, and then I had to point and fire. Well, that all happened so fast, and I was so worried about mechanically getting the gun loaded and firing. By the time I fired, the bird was on the way down, and my dog was like underneath the bird, watching it come down. I blew the whistle, and because he was right there, I yelled sit then too. He sat with one duck in his mouth, and the other duck was right below him, and he's looking down at it. I whistled him in, and luckily he didn't switch. So,
well, that's a really good point that you bring up, is just the how quick all that can happen, and then having to handle the gun in between, especially on land. It doesn't take much time for them to pick up, that blind and be on their way back, especially if it's a dog that runs on the way back. Some dogs, kind of trot on the way back, but I can see where that would be a challenge.
Yeah. If you've got a fast dog, I knew Bayou Bonnie is a speed walker. She can really fly. Like you're running that's something you gotta watch out for. And that's where practicing mechanics of the gun is vital. So that, I practice a lot and I still ran into that issue.
Right. I actually have an 870 that I'm going to have to get out in the next couple of weeks and just go through the motions a little bit like that.
It's usually the ones that I hunt test, the ones that I've handled. They're not necessarily the most well-oiled and smoothest either. So they're a little stiff, and you're monkeying around with that quite a bit. So let's see the walk up. So on the walk up, essentially you will come out of the holding blind. And unless they do a walk out, which I've done at a test as well, where it's at the end and it's the last bird, but for this purpose, we'll talk about it's where it's the first bird. Come out of the holding blind with your dog on lead. Hopefully they're healing well. You come to the first gun station, take your lead off your dog, put your shell into your gun, right? You start walking with your dog at heel. The judges, after you walk, they'll have a designated spot they usually haven't marked. They will launch a bird. It will land probably 10, 15, 20 yards in front of your dog. You must fire the gun. Your dog needs to stay at heel until you send them. And then you can send them when the bird hits the ground. So it's you can blow your whistle there too, or say sit. I highly, highly, highly recommend this.
Right. That was definitely my next question.
It's going to you just get in that habit where a bird goes in the air, you blow the whistle. Whether that's diversion, whether that's walk up, it'll help.
With that being said, you kind of mentioned, you're walking around with your dog on lead. Like I had asked a moment ago, how much does lead manners and holding blind manners come into play with your dog at that level?
Not probably not as much as you would think. The tests that I ran, I saw dogs that weren't great in the holding blind. They can't tackle it and knock it over. Usually you see that at a started test. My dog may have been one of those dogs at one point in time when he was like 8 months old. He wasn't doing that at the season level. But as far as at walking at a proper heel, at a test, he generally prefers to try to choke himself to death. So, he did that at the season level, and we were fine. We weren't judged on that at all. So, if they're out of control and not just pulling, maybe you get in trouble. And it's going to depend on the judges too and what they're looking for, their preference, their style. But I didn't get marked down, and I saw plenty of other dogs who didn't have the. They weren't awful, but they weren't the best either as far as holding blind manners and walking to the line at a nice heel with a little slack in the lead.
Gotcha.
So when you talk about getting marked down, are you aware of what you're getting marked down on? And also, if you do fail a series, I'm assuming they let you know by the end of the series.
They do, yeah. Yeah, they'll let you know. And you can ask what you get marked down for. I mean, if you read the rule book and you take a step back and you're able to understand what they're looking for, you probably right. will know what you're getting marked down for, right? If your dog has a controlled break or is creeping, or you know, you blow the whistle when your dog's at 20 yards in the blind and they're at 40 and you blow it again and then they're at 50 before you blow it a third time and they stop, like you're probably getting marked down a little bit.
Right.
Something interesting when I went to my started hunt test is we had apprentice judge the first day. And he was like, yeah, you know, as soon as your dog leaves the holding blind, we're judging it. So I don't know if he was saying, you know, be mindful that that's technically when judging starts, or if he was saying like they were looking for heel manners there. That was something that kind of sketched me out as a first time hunt test runner at all. Was hearing that, I was like, oh no.
No, that's right. That's right. But you know, at the lower levels, you're not probably going to be getting marked down. Like if you're at the starter or season level and your dog is dragging you to the line on lead, but they go out and do the work, you're going to pass. If you're really marginal and your dog is like terrible, in the holding blind, knocking it over, they might make note of that. It's at the finish level where you can literally walk out of the holding blind and fail.
Gotcha. So you had mentioned that Mac almost switched out on you mid-test one time. Are there any other lessons that have kind of presented themselves to you through hunt tests? And if so, how did you tailor your training to help work on some of those bugs?
Sure. So the switching, that was only once, and that was because of the speed of the test and my slowness and the setup and all that stuff. I've not had any issues with that ever again, which is good. When I ran started, the first test I showed up at, Mac was like less than 9 months old, and he picked up every bird and delivered it perfectly to hand. And then I was like, okay. And then I got cocky, signed up for a double, a Saturday, Sunday. And we traveled, stayed overnight, and at that test, he decided that he would get back to heel, spit the bird out, and then would mouth it when pick it up. And I was like horrified, because again, I go into every test trying to, you know, have my dog just ace it. So that is still the thing that, like, you know, I have this like irrational fear in the back of my head that he's going to spit it out and I want to pick it back up, which is completely irrational because we patched that hole or what. And essentially we went back and just went through force fetch again, and not through the whole thing, but reinforced it. And then, you know, a big thing that I didn't do when I went through force fetch the first time is I didn't transition over to live birds. I didn't have a lot of access to them, and that showed, right? Because what you'll find at a test is that your dog will break down. They will show you where the holes in the training are. It might not be right away, but you know, that second, that third test, if you're running them back to back, you'll see it. And so that was a huge hole in my training. You know, that was the biggest one at the started level. At the season level, there wasn't anything that it was like, oh wow. You know, he wasn't creeping, a little bit of happy feet. You know, he gets excited. He's, you know, he's anxious to go. But that really was an issue. That didn't become an issue until I ran finished this past year, where the happy feet became a little bit of creeping. So your dog will show you, if they have whistle refusals, it's like, okay, you got to work on that. If, you know, they have a sloppy mouth or a happy mouth, they're spitting out birds, that they'll show you at a test. And my biggest one was just the mouth. That was the biggest thing outside of getting to the line at heel, which I think I keep talking about. You know, that's one that he will walk perfectly at heel in training, in whatever, but you get a test and he just knows. He knows. And I mean, one of the season tests we were on the water series, and I came out of the holding blind, and he was so jacked up, he started to just choke himself and drag himself. We got 10 feet from the bucket. He stopped. He pooped, then proceeded to drag me to the bucket.
What a boot and rally. Wow.
That's a good story, man.
So, it was. And then he, you know, we picked up the marks, despite me trying to screw it up and swinging too quickly to this in the second mark. And when
was there when, any commentary from the blind. Judges? Like, did anyone see that?
they just looked and laughed, and you know, that's not something you see every day. Dogs puking on
I've
the
seen
way.
Dogs poop and pee, but I've never heard of a dog puking. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, I mean, he stopped because he was dragging smart. He was going to pass out.
Gotcha.
He wasn't getting any oxygen.
That's good, man.
I know that's like the thing though. I finished this past year, and the thing I'm most nervous about, well, I was nervous about the whole thing, but I'm super nervous to walk up there to like the holding blinds on, you know, the second holding blind or the first holding blind with my dog on lead, because all these, you know, pros, and they all have, you know, super polished dogs they've been working with for years, and their dogs are walking at a perfect heel. My dog is bouncing up and down, right? I mean, he's looking me in the eye. He's just bouncing up and down on the way there because he's so jacked up. So
that's a funny story.
It's pretty good.
But that speed bump kind of reminds me. I wonder if that's a common thing. I'm sure it has to be because of lack of availability of birds during that whole force fetch process. But I hit the same speed bump with Sailor and started that. It opened up my eyes to that hole in herd training with as far as it comes with birds and horse fetch.
I have a pro that I train with locally, and he has said that even if you do have access to birds, it makes a difference, like what kind of birds. And like if you've been training with birds that you killed during hunting season, and then you get your dog on a pen raised bird at a hunt test, they might just balk at it, and you know that's not what they're used to. So I think they can be pretty particular with bumpers, even.
That's a good
point.
You
know, so
mm-hmm. Yeah. The other thing too is wet birds, right? Your dogs, you know, if they haven't touched a lot of wet birds, you know, that difference, they're going to get sticky. They're going to get, you know, maybe mouthy as well.
Right on. Yep. You got to have the nasty birds, because if you're running, you know, dog number 50 and, you know, the end of the day, you don't know, you know, it's hard to practice for that. So I like to refreeze my birds like 100 times. So we're pretty close. Throw some ants on them.
Yeah. You're doing your dog justice by giving them some sketchy birds at times, right? I love that story about Mac booting, rallying like he's at Simpa Apple Pie going to college or something. But you know what are some? I'm interested now. Tell me a little bit more about Mac. I know he's a bit of an internet sensation for one of his irrational phobias.
Yeah, he's something. So that's not the first video of his that's gone viral. You know, he's interesting. The older he gets, I swear, the more things he's afraid of. You know, just weird stuff like leaves, you know, like a single leaf laying in the driveway, which is the video you're referring to, Dominic. You know, when I picked him up, he, you know, it was from a small breeder. I didn't intend to run hunt tests. I didn't really intend to get into this. You know, he doesn't have a great pedigree, right? His parents didn't do hunt tests and didn't really hunt. If you go a little further up, his bloodline is where you'll find some dogs that ran hunt tests, and a little bit further up, and you'll find a dog that's called Lean Mac, who was like the primary stud dog,
who every lab is
in the lab
to.
World in his day.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. So, you know, but I got him, and then I had a mentor who helped me get started, and then, you know, found out that, you know, he just had a lot of natural ability. He's always been a really strong marking dog, and that helped me. That helped give me confidence to really dive into the hunt test game, because it made it easy, right? I feel like I can train the basics. I'm pretty good at training basic obedience. you know, and marking, he just came natural. He just, you know, bird falls down, he goes and picks it up. It's pretty, you know, it's that simple. So, you know, I don't, is there anything else you're referring to, Dominic, as far as what you want to know about
him? No, I just didn't know if, you know, he's afraid of ice cubes too, or if there's something else that.
No, no. He loves ice cubes and he loves ice cream. So, yeah. So the thing is that when he passes a hunt test, he gets Culver's drive through. So I don't know if you guys have Culver's.
Yeah, where I you're do. At.
Okay. So we go and he gets, I mean, he, every drive through, he thinks he's getting food, but I mean, he knows he's got Culver's.
So I take it he doesn't have too sensitive of a stomach.
Well, so actually he does. That's the funny part. When he was a puppy, I going through the treat training process, I didn't use treats. I used kibble because it's the only thing that wouldn't give him the squirts. So, but for whatever reason, ice cream doesn't seem to have any effect at all on him. And maybe we condition him to that because there's a drive-in, like old school, like 50s style drive-in, fast food joint that has ice cream. We used to go there all the time. And so, you know, we conditioned him to be able to eat ice cream.
That's good. Good reward. Let him have a little something with some value to it.
Yeah. Yeah. And before my daughter was born, you could drop anything else on the floor out of the kitchen. He wouldn't even look at it. He didn't even care about it because he never had people food, just ice cream. first time we gave him a hamburger, he didn't know what to do with it. He licked it because he thought it was ice cream.
I've heard similar stories. All right. What else you got, Dominic?
You know, yeah. So you mentioned his marking abilities were stellar, and that's one of those things that played into his strong abilities when hunt test season comes around. Are there any other, you know, favorite abilities of his that, you know, are really strengths that make running seasoned easy for you guys?
So he's always been a dog from a young age that wanted to please, right? He looked to me, you know, wanted to make me happy, right? And so that made him a team player. And so, you know, that made us more effective at the season level because, you know, he was looking to me. He wasn't polished, right? You know, you're not going to be polished at that level generally. If you are, you're probably running a level below where you should be. But being a strong team, being on the same page, right? He knows what he's there for, and he knows that I'm there to help him get his reward, which is those birds. And that's, you know, that's honestly my favorite trait of his, just because if we didn't do this, right, he would still want to please, even if he was just a house dog, a family dog. And so, you know, I got really lucky in that I had a dog who, you know, is not a type A personality and is looking to me to, looking to me for commands, looking to me for reassurance, for reward. And that is the biggest thing that I can't say enough how lucky I am that he has that specific trait.
Well, right on. So for people who haven't seen Mac, and also if you guys haven't seen that Leaf video, you guys should look Ground Dog Outpost up on TikTok, I think is where it's posted, right?
Yeah, it's probably got like 200,000 views now.
Yeah, it's pretty viral, and it's pretty funny to watch too. So if you guys haven't seen it, go check it out. And while you're there, you're going to notice that Mac is a Fox Red Lab, right?
Yes,
so out of all the flavors, vanilla, chocolate, black, Fox Red,
strawberry,
you know, what, strawberry, key lime, cookies and cream, what drew you to Mac being Fox Red Lab? Was it just circumstance? Were you looking for it? What's kind of that backstory pre-Mac that led you to him?
That's a really good question. So the dog that I had growing up, who I mentioned before, was not well trained, was a total knucklehead. He had Candlewood bloodlines, and so that's a pretty well known Candlewood is a pretty well known breeder. So we're looking for the same thing, and my wife happened to find some Fox Red puppies, and I didn't even know, I didn't actually know about Fox Red Labs until him. And, you know, we drove 5 hours and picked him up without ever actually seeing him. He was the smallest male, the last dog in the litter. Nobody wanted him. So, but he's, you know, he's like a super dark red color, and he gets even darker in the winter with less sunlight too. And now that I own a Fox Red, now I kind of always want to have Fox Red Labs. We'll see if that holds true, but you know, now I'm partial. Now I'm biased.
So your next dog, are you going to name it Return of the Mac?
Return of the Mac. I don't know what I'm going to name it. That's a good question. So it could be, I don't know. I can't speculate on names because that's such a like spur of the moment thing for me. I don't plan that out ahead of time.
That does make me think, you know, why Mac?
Why Mac? Randomly the day before we went to pick him up, in the morning, I thought, I'm like, Mac would be a good name. And then, my wife got home that night and said, I think we should name the dog Mac. And I was like, okay, coincidence. Wow. It's going to be Mac.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I didn't know if you guys,
that's crazy.
I didn't know if you guys stopped at like McDonald's on your way to pick him up on that 5 hour drive or something.
No, we didn't do that. But, Mac is like a terrible name for a dog that you're also going to use the back command for, because Mac and back, does he even hear the difference? I'm not sure. I think he does, but, you know, when you're sending a dog on a blind, I use back. And so, you know, but when I send him on Mark, I'm using Mac. Didn't know.
Kind of makes you wonder if Lean Mac ran into the same issue.
That's a legitimate question. Yeah.
Well, I think that's about it for my questions. John, do you want to jump into kind of our updates for the past week?
Right on. Yep. So updates for me. And I talked to y'all a little bit about, you know, preparing for a season hunt test. You know, kind of eyeballing what tests are coming up, and I've got my eyes on a couple of them, even have some alarms set on my phone. I see some pending, that I'm keeping an eye on as well. So other than that, the biggest update is this Sunday, I'm picking up a new puppy. And speaking of red dogs, it's going to be a red field bred golden retriever. Very excited. Also, with that, it has me kind of dodging a hurricane a little bit, because Louisiana is supposed to get hit again with another hurricane this weekend. So I'm going to be in Georgia.
You're going to skip Dodge a little bit there. So are you settled on a name yet for her?
Actually, yeah. As some of our listeners may be aware, I think we might have talked about it in the first episode, but I do my dog's names along with the alphabet. And so the last dog was Chief, who I still have obviously, but now we're on letter D, and all of my dogs, their first name and their registered name is Bayou. And so for this dog, I wanted to take it back to my roots, and I grew up on a bayou called Bayou Desired, and so I took the first four letters of Desired, and that is going to be my puppy's name, Desi, D-E-S-I. And I think it's, I haven't met her yet, but I think it's going to be a pretty cool name for a future champion.
Man, I'm looking forward to getting some videos from you and seeing some updates on this little red dog.
Oh, yeah. There'll be plenty of them.
So my updates for the past week, me and my wife have gotten the opportunity to take an anniversary trip for the past week. So we've been down at the beach here in North Carolina, and Sailor tagged along. You can kind of read a little bit more about it in my my most recent Instagram post. But it's been a nice break. Sailor's gotten some training in there, but it's been, any training she's gotten has mainly focused on obedience work. So it's been a great opportunity to work some refreshers there. It's funny you mentioned your hunt test is the 24th and 25th of October, because there's a poodle specialty test that's coming up in South Carolina near me, the same dates. But from seeing what I saw from Sailor at the started hunt test, I think it would be doing her an injustice to push her for, you know, X date to be ready for this test. So I'm more than likely not going to be entering her in that. However, they do have a couple of training days ahead of time. I might take Sailor down there, do some training alongside the same dogs that are going to be running the day later, and get her some exposure and connect with some more poodle people that way.
Probably would be good. Good exposure, good practice. And then I would like to watch the those working class tests as well, just because I know they're a little bit different from your AKC or HRC hunt tests.
And I've recently learned that those tests, of passing those, earns you, you know, your WC title or your WCX, depending on which rigger you go to. But it also, I don't know if this is the same for other breeds, but X amount of passes in whatever rigger earns you credits towards a breed medallion.
Interesting.
Yeah, I am not versed in that at all. If our listeners want to do research on their own and dive more into it, go for it. But yeah, it said something like, you know, different passes in X, Y, and Z earns you, you know, you have a bronze medallion, a silver medallion, and a gold medallion. Interesting. Might be an avenue we pursue in the future, but nothing on the horizon for the near future.
Nothing hunt test wise. You do have some actual hunts coming up though, right? I know about one in particular.
That's right. So going to be going down to Mound, Louisiana to along with you to visit our buddy Brad and do a goose hunt with him down there and try our luck. I guess it's going to be on the Mississippi River, right?
Mississippi Flyway, Mississippi River with Brad, who was on 2 weeks ago, our episode, The Pound Dog. He's the guy who rescued the dog, Parrish, Pound, and he started hunting him 3 weeks after he picked him up. So, should be pretty cool.
Yeah. Along with that, I have yet to schedule my hunt with Honk Stoppers up in Washington State. I need to schedule that, trying to figure some things with work and home life to put that on the books. But ideally, I'd like to drive there just so I can bring Sailor and she can pick up some geese basically out there on the West Coast. But it might turn into me flying. Again, I'm still trying to sort through the logistics of that hunt, but that is something that's in the near future for us. We'll get more updates as that nears.
All right. Well, I think that just about wraps it up for the episode. We want to thank everyone that stuck with us. If you haven't yet and you've made it this far, why don't you give us a subscribe on whatever podcast platform you look at and give us a rating. We would love some 5-star ratings out there. Show us some love. And we look forward to having you listen to our next episode.